The Chinese Football Podcast, bringing you news, views, stories, and analysis of the wonderful world of Chinese football. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on WildEastFootball.net. The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. This week we are very much up for the cup, with the chance to go in-depth into some corking semi-finals and look ahead a long, long way, admittedly, to what could be a fantastic end to the season in the final as well. There's a chance for us also to continue raking over the bones of Beijing Guoan's season, which I'm sure all three of us will enjoy in different ways, and to set up some listener questions which will take us into the international break as well. I am your regular host, Steve Crooks, and joined by our usual panel of experts, Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. How are you doing, Cam?
Hey, Steve. I'm celebrating my birthday today, so that's a dedication to the pod for you.
Oh, wow. That's dedication. Happy birthday, sir. We won't ask a gentleman his age. And Brandon Chemers in Beijing. How are you doing, Brandon?
I'm all right. And he shares the birthday with Piaocheng and Jintaiyan, but not the same year, I don't think.
No, I hope not for their sake.
Well, with some of the dodgy birth certificates that are going around, you never know. I feel like I should throw an Obafemi Martins joke in here. It's probably an appropriate time. And speaking of legendary FA Cup performances for Shenhua, which of course Obafemi Martins brings to mind, I think we have to start with the Dalian Shenhua semi-final, first of all. Absolutely cracking game, this one. And Cam, for me, this was the performance of the season from Shenhua.
Absolutely. I find myself in a really strange position. I find myself lost at what to say. It's such a smooth performance. It was just completely unlike Shenhua, particularly as an away game. I think Wang Yongpo was really amazing. This guy found a way to pass the ball forward when usually Shenhua would just like ping it sideways. Cao Yinding had a great game. El Shawari's two goals were absolutely fantastic and showed why Shenhua paid that money for him. And I mean, how many times have you heard that sentence? Like, a player proving why Shenhua splashed out that much money on them. So overall, it was amazing. And it was actually it really felt like a big game as well, since there was a really big crowd there. And I think the occasion and the match both did the CFA Cup some much needed justice.
Yeah, absolutely. From more of a neutral perspective, Brandon, do you think we should all be completely gussing about Shenhua and their newfound richness of kind of options up front? Or was it actually quite a close game that they deserve to edge kind of on fairness still?
No, I mean, I honestly think that the scoreline gives Dalian a little too much credit. They had, honestly, nothing all night long, and it was pretty much all Shenhua. I mean, Dalian scored one late to make things a little interesting, to give the Shenhua fans a bit of nerves. But on the attack, the chances, the play, it was really all Shenhua.
I certainly had more than a bit of nerves at the end. How concerned are you, and how concerned is the fan base in general about that defence, Cam? Because this was two good attacks and two very poor defences going against each other. Are the fans kind of getting a bit carried away and talking about the final and next season already? Or is there some kind of voices of realism in there still to remind them we've still probably only got half a team at this point?
A bit of both. I think a lot of the fans are really excited to be in a cup final again. I don't think anyone would have expected that a few months ago. In fact, I don't think anyone would have expected that with a lineup that Shenhua put out in the previous round against Tianjin, but that's another story. I think this fluidity and smoothness of the attacking component of the squad just went to show up how completely diabolical the defence is. Li Peng is just the worst central defender, like a regular starter, that Shenhua has ever had. He's completely off the pace. He's always usually make a critical error every game. And the rest of the defence really isn't that great either. Bai Jiajun was been a really solid left back for a great number of years, but he's had a hard season for a lot of reasons. I'm not convinced that he's back up to speed in terms of how good he really could play. It's a pleasant surprise for Shenhua fans, so I think they're entitled to.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, I think the defensive issues are something that we see across the board in the CSL. There's very, very few teams, and even the teams near the top of the league don't really have strong defenses. So I don't necessarily think it's that big an issue for Shenhua.
Brandon's closet Shenhua background is finally coming out on the pod as we get towards 100 episodes. It's taken us a while, but I knew we'd break him in the end. As much as I'd love to make this just an entire Shenhua 11, we should probably move on to the other semi, which was also a great and dramatic game in its own way. Shandong putting both feet into the final after a victory at Shanghai Stadium. Cam, there was a bit of VAR drama here. A good performance from 10 men as well. Do you think that Shandong deserved this, or was this a case of Shanghai International Port Group kind of shooting themselves in the foot in a big game once again?
I think SAPG bottled it, actually. I think they really have the capability to win this game. I think that Shandong are a strong team, but I don't think they're very stronger than they were last year. They're tend to be very consistent. I just think SAP just didn't show up. They didn't play that well. They had the chances, but Shandong looked a bit more dangerous to me. They were missing Dailin as a defender, and Dailin is a guy who's a specialist at giving away possession because he shoots from ridiculous distances out. So perhaps that was an element in this victory for Shandong.
Yeah, there was some concerns about their kind of starting defensive lineup before the game, but I kind of made a note here that the only team in the semi-finals who actually have a defence, and that probably saw them through, Brandon. I mean, certainly the home side were slapstick on both of the goals.
Yeah, I mean, their defense isn't even that strong, per se. I mean, yeah, they're missing Dailin, but Zheng Zheng as a center back, especially when he had to face off against Hulk and Arnautovic, those two real big bodies, I thought they'd abuse him. Fellaini helped out dropping back a lot to cover, but I mean, Hulk also, his tendency to roam around the pitch, it helped out. But yeah, I think we really have to give credit where credit's due. And Li Xiaopeng, I mean, before the quarterfinals, he talked about how the side had tended to dominate Guoan, how they're much better placed to play against Guoan versus playing against Evergrande and SIPG. And for this one, he played around with tactics a lot, changed up the formation, went with a lot of height in the lineup instead of playing Geddes, who tends to be their key player a lot of times. And it worked. And I think this is another one where the scoreline was a lot closer than the match actually was.
And Cam, where do you think this leaves Shanghai International Port Group? They're still kind of within striking distance in the league after the weekend's results, but is it unfair to say it's basically now Champions League or bust for them at this point?
I think it's difficult to argue against that. I think Champions League is their best bet, without any doubt, for some silverware this season. We talked about league race last week. Yeah, it's looking pretty grim in terms of anyone other than Evergrande winning it. But, you know, you never know. But I think they have to concentrate on the continental competition now.
And we're going to talk a little bit about the Champions League and their manager in the second half of the show as well. I do want to come back to you, Brandon, on the Li Xiaopeng narrative and the progress that Shandong seemed to be making over the last few years. What do you think the cup final means to them? They came so close last year, obviously. Do you think they have to get silverware this year for them to consider, you know, still being on the right trajectory? And to, I mean, what's the last time that a side won a trophy under a permanent Chinese manager, out of interest?
Yeah, it would be going back a couple of years, I think. I think Jiangsu won the cup under Gao Hongbo.
Could be. We don't talk about that.
Yeah, but yeah, you'd have to go back a fair few years since the last time a Chinese manager has won something. I think for Shandong, they'd go into this cup the favorites. I think maybe not overwhelming favorites, but I do think they have the edge. They have the better players. They're in the better position in the league. But at the same time, I think that, you know, the cup competition is what it is, and anything can happen. And I think for Shandong that, you know, if they do end up losing the cup, you know, 2 years in a row, it'll be disappointing. But I don't necessarily think that they're going in the wrong direction. I think that there's a lot of signs that things are right in Shandong.
Yeah, looking ahead to the final, Cam, we'll do a proper preview close to the time. It's a remarkably long time until we'll get to do that, isn't it? I think 3 months between the semis and the final, and then a two-legged final separated by 5 weeks. Does that put a bit of a dampener on the fan excitement there over in Shanghai?
Yeah, it's a complete joke. It shows that the CFA have contempt for their own competition. I mean, I understand there's a lot of football which is scheduled around then, but it just shouldn't happen. If you want to balance out the domestic football scene, you need to have like a strong domestic cup. And the cup has enough problems as it is, as we've talked about in the past, where teams not taking it seriously in the earlier rounds and all sorts of things like this. So to separate the... I mean, to separate the legs by, was it 5 weeks? I think it's just, surely they could have found a better solution. I really think it's a big shame.
Yeah, and an opportunity missed as well. And we will be giving the cup a little bit of love in a minute. But what do you think the better solution is here, Brandon? I mean, should they start the cup later on in the season? They could finish the cup a little bit earlier, like the League Cup does, I think, in many European leagues. Or because if you want to keep the final as a showpiece end to the season, these breaks are almost unavoidable, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, I have no problem with it. It is a bit long, but I don't think it's a big deal. I think there's more of an issue that we see a lot of these rounds sort of piled fairly close together when there is such a large gap between the later rounds. I think that is... That tends to be what I have a problem with more than anything. They could start it a bit later, but I mean, this isn't the League Cup. It is like with a lot of countries where the FA Cup tends to be sort of the season topper, and I like it in that position because it does provide a lot of drama. We had a couple of really good quarterfinals. Both of these semifinal matches were great. And I expect to see a lot of drama in the finals over two legs, even if it is separated by so much time. It's not like, at least the season is going on, whereas in previous years we've seen both legs played after the season is over. I think that's a little too much.
Yeah, it's not without its problems, and we do have a question on this that we'll get back to in a minute, but in general, I think we're big fans of the Cup in the pod, Cam. It seems that it always brings a lot of drama from the quarterfinals onwards, and we spend an inordinate amount of time talking about it compared to the league. Do you think it's because the title races tend to fizzle out a little bit, or because a lot of these kind of traditional big clubs just can't put it together over a season, but you put them in some high-stakes knockout football, and it's kind of unmissable viewing?
I'm not sure. I wonder if it's something to do with the fact that so many teams don't take it that seriously in the opening rounds, and then it just suddenly springs into action. So maybe all the drama kind of gets pent up, and then by the time clubs suddenly realise, oh, actually, yeah, we could win this, they start playing from the quarterfinals onwards. So maybe it's all kind of shoehorned into a short space. But, I mean, we talk about the lack of a title race. That's all the more reason for the cup to be given pride of place. And I actually agree with Brandon. I do think it's best to keep it as like a kind of nice kind of curtain, not a curtain raiser, a curtain dropper or whatever you call it, for the end of the season. That's the right time to do it. But as we said, having it spaced, the timing of it is pretty horrible. I think one thing might be worth doing is maybe play the early rounds. Right at the start of the season, even maybe as like a curtain raiser, because that's basically what they do in some places. I know they do that in Scotland with the League Cup. They make like a mini group, and that's basically becomes a substitute for pre-season friendly. So given the way some of the earlier rounds are not taken that seriously by clubs, that wouldn't really affect things too badly that way, and it might allow clubs to who really didn't want to take it seriously, they could just put out whatever team they want, and I don't know. I'm starting to ramble, but I think you get my point.
Yeah, I agree with both of you that they could space it out a lot better for sure. And I do want to come to the question that we got, Brandon. I know we've touched on which teams value the cup and don't a few times, but this in from James Reeve: do clubs really value the cup? Even when Changchun were in the CSL, I felt like they'd always play a bunch of youth players instead, and personally he'd be desperate to win it every season. I think for lots of us who come certainly from kind of British or European backgrounds, we're enamored with cup competitions. They tend to take a bit less priority for modern day clubs, even in European leagues and so on. But I mean, it's a real shame that more teams don't go for it, because from the quarters onward, it's great. And as we've seen this year, if a basket case like Shenhua in 2019 can get to the final, then really there should be hope for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen plenty of drama over the years and lower division size and everything. But what it comes down to is that, and like you said, it's true everywhere, it's true in Europe as well, that that sides like Changchun that are sort of destined to be in the relegation picture every year when they're in the top flight, and now potentially in the promotion picture or close to it every year, they have more important things to play for. And there's a lot more money, there's a lot more importance with staying up or going up rather than winning the cup. And so that's what teams are going to focus on. And they're not wrong to do so. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so I think what we've seen, especially, is what it tends to be when you get to the later rounds, it's teams that tend not to have quite as much to play for that are going all out and that can win, because they have a fairly safe position in the league. They're happy with where they are, and they can compete for these competitions.
Yeah, Cam, I get the feeling like you're going to refute that and rail against squad rotation and kind of gaming cup fixtures here.
I just think if you're going to play a game, you should play a win. Otherwise, what's the point in anybody turning up? I can understand that some clubs are in a situation where their status as a CSL club is definitely a priority. And as such, that's understandable to some extent that they think staying up is more important than doing well in the cup. But it's like a systematic thing. The way football's run shouldn't be like that. I mean, if you could say, well, that's clubs are going to make the choice to not give the cup the respect it deserves, but it shouldn't ever come down to that. But as we say, it's not just a Chinese thing, not by any means. But I do feel at least in the UK, let's just take the UK as an example, the cups for like a small, the cup is like, it's not just a thing for clubs who are in the top leagues to get a chance of winning. It's a really massive boon for the small guys. Like, you get these village teams who have the chance to get drawn against Man United if they get through enough Premier League rounds, and that sort of thing just doesn't even happen in the Chinese FA Cup, because I mean, a lot of these games for the lower league teams and the amateur teams that take place in the weekday afternoon and stuff like that. So I just think there's a general lack of prestige and respect given to the cup, and unfortunately clubs prioritising CSL survival over the taking the cup seriously don't contribute to making that situation better.
Well, but I tend to disagree. I know this is something that you would equally rally against, but I mean, with those matches, you take the English example, those matches, what are they about? It's not about the magic of the cup. It's about money. It's about having Manchester United come to some shit little village and playing that team in a 2,000-seat stadium or something, and you know, all the money that can bring. And the CFA Cup, there isn't the money there, and that's why there isn't as much motivation to for a team like a 14th or 15th place side in the CSL at that time to try and stay up. Versus there's much more motivation, there's much more money in staying up than staying in the cup. And so if we want to make the cup more important or do more, you know, we've seen so much money going into the league. If more money went into the cup, then potentially there is the opportunity. I do think for some of the lower division sides or the amateur sides that we do get in the cup, when they do well, when they now with the draw and everything, and they have the potential to play in Evergrande or something, it is a really big deal. It is something that they're looking for. You know, you can't blame them that they play in a stadium without lights, and so they have to have these afternoon starts or potentially weekend starts. You know, we've seen this round was very strange being Monday and Tuesday So there's the willingness or there's the opportunity potential that dates can be played around with. I just think that what it comes down to is we're talking about modern football here at the end of the day, and everything comes down to money.
It's true to say that money is a big part of it, but you're mistaken about the lower league British games. These are guys who play week in, week out, and they're usually semi-pro, and these guys aren't earning a lot of money. So for the players, it is a chance to get something which is, it's not just about money, it's about getting to test yourself against much higher level, it's about getting all the media attention, it's about your club being on the back, potentially the back page of the national newspapers, where normally it struggles to even be mentioned even in like a regional newspaper. So that kind of prestige and that feeling of this, it's a big deal, that comes from the fact that the Cup itself have a lot of history and they have a lot of tradition behind it. And obviously in the Chinese Cup it doesn't quite have that, but it is possible to build these things over time, and if there was more money in the Cup, and if there was, the Cup was taken more seriously, then I do think this situation would improve over time.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's still the club that gets a lot of money from these big games and everything. It's interesting, though, I will say that the CFA Cup is trying to play up the history, saying it's a competition that's been around since 1956 in different regards, obviously, but they are trying to play up the history side of things. So that is interesting that they're making an attempt at that.
And there are some good, and very good points on both sides there, actually, to agree with it. There's some good moves that the CFA are actually making. The ability for the Cup winners to go straight into a Champions League group is positive. The fact that it's now an open kind of unrigged draw is definitely a positive as well. So hopefully we'll see things continue to improve in the earlier rounds. But I think that discussion that you've both had there really highlights that the Cup in and of itself is really a mirror for kind of the broader culture of the game and other things that are going on, both in other leagues and, of course, in the world of Chinese football as well. We are going to draw a line under that and move on to a little break for Phenomenon of the Week before we get stuck into some non-Cup-related topics in the second half of the show.
The Chinese Football Podcast. Do you enjoy listening to the pod regularly? Are you wondering how you could support us? Then please visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/ChineseFootballPodcast. The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
So it is time for Phenomenon of the Week, and the winner of the poll last week was Elkerson, with that tribute to Walter Martinez coming in second, and a bit like the actual typhoon itself, the typhoon nomination washing out as a damp squib into third. Was it another tactical nomination, Cam? It does mean that you get to go first this week.
I'm going to nominate Aronovich of SIPG for his very disrespectful face-rubbing gesture during the Chinese national anthem during the game last night. I think he should be sternly punished forthwith.
We have seen precedent for this kind of thing, of course. Watch this punishment bingo with bated breath. Brandon, who or what are you going to nominate this week?
So, well, I would like to nominate all of the fans, however many they were, that put up with my horrible moonlighting commentary gig for the CFA Cup. I will instead nominate the CFA's national team training camp squad, which was 60 men, was cut down to 40. We're now at 35 men. It's getting ludicrous, the number of people that are being named to the national team and the way these cuts are being made. So I'll give it to them for that.
Excellent. And then last and not least, I am going to nominate Elkerson again because he's in the news for his naturalization. We'll speak more about that next week. And I want to see how many times I can nominate him and see if I can beat Chris's old record for nominating Qin Sheng any number of times in a season. So look forward, as always, to seeing how the listeners vote and any other suggestions that they've got, and we'll be back to see how those votes go next week. But moving away from those topics that we've teased, that we can indeed come back to next time, we promised you, listeners, that we would rake over the coals of Guan's season in a bit more depth. We spoke about the Schmidt sacking and kind of differing viewpoints internally and externally last time, but given how things stand now, they really are kind of out of contention in the league unless, you know, Evergrande completely implode. things looked so good and then seemed to fall apart really quickly, Brandon. Were the signs there earlier, or was it just a dramatic kind of month or so that's taken everyone by surprise up in Beijing?
Well, there were signs there all year from the fans who were watching the side. They had been talking about it all along, and even after some of the close wins, there are plenty of people that are saying, hey, you know, this is a side with a lot of problems. We're still far away from being the champions and everything. There's lots of things to be concerned about and lots of things that need to be fixed. I think there were those problems to see, and really what happened was, I know that you want to talk about, we'll surely talk about the injury to Jonathan Vieira. Him going down was crucial, but at the same time, Zhang Xijie also was out. And so you have basically your two creative midfielders both going down at the same time and leaving Renato Augusto basically all alone, and that was a problem. The injury to Lille was a problem, but nowhere near as significant as having both Vieira and Zhang out at the same time. And Schmidt wasn't able to change things around. He wasn't able to come up with something to deal with those issues.
Cam, I'm going to get your... We spoke about your perspective on the sacking last week, but you famously have been saying all year that Guan, with their transfer business and kind of stability, although that's now an interesting point to look back on, obviously, were your picks for the title. How surprised were you to see it all unravel?
I was surprised, as I predicted they would winners. That looks very unlikely now. I mean, as far as just talking about injuries, I mean, when you have... a system where you're only allowed to have four foreign players, if you lose even one of these guys, as I did with Vieira, then you know you're up the creek without a paddle, and the stability is greatly hampered by that. So I mean, that's the nature of this league. If you lose a foreign player, it has serious potential to derail your entire season, and I'm not really qualified, quite frankly, to say if that, how significant that is to the downfall of Guan, but I'm sure Brandon would be able to say more about that, but it's definitely been a factor.
Yeah, it's easy, Brandon, with hindsight, to say that Vieira has been underrated and he's a player that we've maybe not talked about enough, and he doesn't get a lot of the headlines there, even with the other foreign contingent, because Augusto has this habit of scoring very big, important goals, and Bakambu and his kind of streaky form are things that we've spoken about a lot. He has gone under the radar a little bit. I mean, was he always appreciated by Guam fans prior to leaving this gaping hole in the squad, or was it a bit of a shock for those in the know as well?
He was definitely appreciated by Guam fans. I think he was also appreciated by fans around the league. I think I was talking to a Shanghai International Port Group fan before the Guam played them, and they were saying that if they could shoot one Guam player, it would be Vieira ahead of Augusto, because that they saw him as the real playmaker. And as morbid as that may be, but yeah, I mean, Vieira definitely was that guy, and he scored some goals, but he wasn't scoring as many. But I think the thing is that at the end of the day, and this is one of the reasons why I think Schmidt should have gotten fired, is that Evergrande lost Talisca for, I mean, over a month or two. They were fine. SIPG has dealt with a number of injuries, including Hulk. They've been fine. And so that losing one man that completely sunk Guan is an issue, and it just comes down to Schmidt and his tactics.
I mean, how much of this do you feel represents, Cam, the kind of short-term and knee-jerky nature of those who run Chinese football clubs? Because from where I sit, a lot of it seems to be kind of emotional and psychological to me. It seems very clear that they were flying a little bit higher than maybe they anticipated being, and this was a golden chance to win the league, and as soon as they started stuttering, basically, I mean, there are good football reasons as well that we've touched on, but basically everyone started panicking, and this team that we talked about being so professional showed maybe that they're no better organized than many of these other clubs that we tend to stick the boot into on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, I made a lot of praise of Guan's more professional management, because they made some really solid transfer moves. I think I mean, there's been so many. There's, I think half the teams this year have changed their culture already. It's a partly culture of the CSL. It's also, it's, I think it's also the case that a lot of these managers come to China, the foreign managers, they don't want to be here for a long time. So there's not really any longer term plan ever really in place. I have managers who come in, and in China, the managers tend not to have an awful lot of control of a lot of aspects of the club. So, you know, if you don't have a lot of control over the club, you're not going to be that invested in it. You know, you don't have any kind of feel that you've influenced things beyond picking a team every week. And sometimes it's pretty clear that the managers are not picking 100% of the team. There's also some outside influence or non-football reasons behind that. So with all that in mind, it's really not a surprise that managers don't last long, even when they have a pretty impressive run of success.
Yeah, and I'm going to jump in on that stat, actually. As I have it, I think 7 of the 16 teams have switched coaches at this point, two-thirds into the season. That seems about normal for many global leagues. But what I find interesting is half of the teams who've sacked their manager sacked the guy who was the new manager for this season as well. It does seem that there's a lot of kind of knee-jerking and not that much job security. I mean, who would choose to be a manager in China, Brandon? Is it unfair to go with the kind of Western media line that people come here for a quick paycheck before they go back home? Or what kind of managers tend to really fit in and thrive and do well?
Well, I think one, you need time. You need to look at when these managers were brought in and how much influence they had in the transfer situation and everything. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, we coming back to Schmidt, why he was so successful is that they brought him in midway through the season and they gave him time and they said, just do what you want to do, get familiar with these players. And then he was able to be a part of the transfer picture at the end of the year. It's unlike some of the other times when Guan has switched managers, especially with Zaccheroni when they brought him in, and they brought him in late in January when the club had already started preparations for the season. The season was a month away or so. You know, in those situations, it's just sort of there's so much expectations, and these managers are brought in, they're paid a lot of money. You look at a guy like Choi, who was with Tianjin, had done okay, then moved to Dalian because they were paying out a ton of money for him. And, you know, things weren't really going as well as Dalian expected. And so then he's fired. Now he's at Shenhua. It's how long is he going to be given to stay there? And will he be able to build his team? I mean, it looks like he was in bringing him Kim Shin-wook to the side, and that's really paid off. But I think that that's really what it comes down to, is that these managers are making a ton of money and the clubs demand sort of immediate effect, and that is not going to work.
Yeah, and hence we see the turnover that there is. I think this is a good time to bring up a point that Jeff made on Twitter, actually. A difference between Shanghai International Port Group and some of the other sides at the top, potentially, despite their recent struggles, there's not really any rumours going around about Pereira getting fired. I mean, he is alive and well in the Champions League, and he is, you know, banking some credit from winning the league last season, obviously. But is this another example of the club kind of learning their lessons? Because they did the superstar manager thing, and they burned through a few, and they seem to be onto a keeper here, or is that a little bit naive for us to say, do you think, Cam?
I think SIBG have a fairly positive attitude towards continuity and stability. If you remember, they didn't sign anybody for, like, I think it was 2 years before Aronovich joined in the recent window. Also, AVB, I think he left. I mean, it's not clear exactly if he left exactly of his own accord or not, but he was given a lot of faith. I think he won the league last year, so he's obviously got a lot of brownie points stored up because of that. Maybe if he hadn't, maybe they'd be thinking about a change, but I don't know. I don't anticipate them changing the manager in the near future, at least.
I completely disagree. I think there's a completely bullshit point. I think that SIPG, if I think anything short of the final is a failure for SIPG this year in the ACL. And I think if they do get knocked out at this stage, I think Pierre has to go either immediately or at the end of the season. They have nothing left to play for outside of the ACL, and that's their focus. I can't see him staying around. I think that while I don't necessarily disagree with the way Guan fired Schmidt, I did talk about the timing so close to such a big match was an issue. And so I don't think that the SIPG, I think they have the Shanghai media on their side, and maybe Pereira has done a good enough job to win over the local media and everything. But that seat is going to get really hot if they struggle in the ACL.
I think you've forgotten that they lost Wu Lei. Guy scored 27 goals in 30 games. Now they don't have any anymore. And he's a Chinese player. So we have spoken a little bit about how they seem to play pretty well without him, but I don't think you can discount that.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it matters. I think that you still have the expectations for the season, and if you come away with nothing, especially if they get knocked out at this stage of the ACL, I think it's you have to consider if Pereira has done everything he could do, and if it's time for someone else.
Yeah, but they didn't replace Wu Lei with anyone.
I can't wait to hear the listener comments on this one. I think we know how they're going to go with our little army of followers that club has as well. I'd be amazed if they fired him. I kind of understand where you're coming from, Brandon, in that expectations should still be high for any team that's won the league. But I mean, this is a guy who succeeded where a couple of very big name coaches before, you know, didn't. He got them out of that habit of kind of falling at the last hurdle. And I think generally the people who run that club have done a reasonable job of it for a while. I'd be very surprised if they fired him, although not necessarily unhappy from a Shenhua fan perspective. But moving back to Guam, Brandon, we haven't spoken too much about the new man there. I mean, Genesio is an underwhelming appointment. Do you see him lasting more than a year, or are Guan going to be back into the habit that they seem to have broken of kind of firing a coach every mid-season?
Well, Guan was only in that habit very briefly, and that was the Le TV period when they took over and everything. It's really, again, it's equally bullshit to say that's a Guan habit, because Pacheco was there for two seasons. Most of the managers have been there for at least a full season or two. It was just they had a bad period with Zaccheroni and Gonzalez was just an odd choice. And then after that, I mean, Schmidt was the longest serving manager in the CSL up until his recent firing. So I think the Genesio, it's an odd situation all around. His contract is only a 6-month contract. So it's sort of, they put him in a situation to say, win or you're gone. And, you know, losing to Evergrande is not going to be very helpful for him staying. But we'll see how he does. There's really no indication of if he's going to be successful or not. I think, you know, it's hard to say because he's so new. He's still sort of, you know, he's only really managed the Evergrande match. The other match, he got here maybe 2-3 days before. So the side was basically picked by the Ling Dui, or if it was him, it was just him following what Schmidt was doing. I think so far from seeing what he's done, the starting formation is basically the same as Schmidt, and his changes are slightly slower than Schmidt, but it's still more or less the same thing, although he is juggling the formation around a little more than Schmidt would do if things aren't going so well. But we really only have one match to judge him off of, so it'll be interesting to see if he's the man for the future, or if they're looking for someone better at the end of this year.
I think I have to stick up for Steve Brannan. You've sacked Li Jiangsu, Zaccheroni, Gonzalez, Schmidt, and now Bruno's joined in mid-late season. So I think it's a bit of a habit there for Meguan.
Wait, Li Jiangsu was there for three seasons. Three and a half seasons when they sacked him. That's insane. Using him as an example is a joke.
He left in the middle of the season. Steve's point is that changing manager mid-season is the habit that Guan has. And they changed to September, I think. Like, September would count as mid-season in CSL.
Yeah, that's insane to say that.
Well, how let's count them, right? Li Jiangsu, one.
There's a lot of mid-season changes.
Well, five different guys.
It's not half a season, though. What Steve said is half a season. When you're there for two and a half seasons, then not half a season.
Mid-season.
No, he said half a season. He said half a season, though. Which is true of mid-season. Gonzalez is true of Zaccheroni, but it's not true of Schmidt. It is not true of Li Jiangsu. It's an idiotic point to make.
If you're going to use words like bullshit and idiotic,
I was mainly referring to the Zaccheroni period, where he was there for literally one year.
No, Brandon, if you're going to call people idiotic and say bullshit, then I think we have to be pretty precise about what we're saying. Right, you shouldn't call people idiotic.
What Steve said was halfway through the season, not mid-season. If he said mid-season, then I would agree that yes, Guan has changed some managers mid-season over the past 10 years. But with what CSL team hasn't? What team in the world hasn't?
What is that?
Arsenal might be one of the only teams that hasn't fired a manager mid-season. What Steve said is halfway through, that they regularly change managers halfway through the season. So they give half a season to each manager.
I've been speaking English a long time, and to me, mid-season and halfway through the season is pretty much the same thing.
If you want to go back, and it's the same thing that I said in earlier, is Guan going to go back to sacking managers every mid-season? They haven't done that every mid-season. They've done it three times
it's been
in
a habit.
12 years.
You know, it's happened, like I just said, it's happened five times.
It remains to be seen, and we will get to see how many of those remaining clubs who have not fired a manager yet will make it the rest of the way through the season. Watch this space as always, but we'll be moving away from Meta's club game when we do come back and get a chance. Finally, I know you all can't wait to talk about the national team once again next week. But that is your lot for this week, listeners. This has been your Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. I've been your host, Steve Crooks, and I've been joined by Cameron Wilson from Shanghai. Cam, always a pleasure.
Cheers, Steve. Thank you.
And Brandon Chem is in Beijing. Brandon, until next time.
Yeah, fun as always, Steve.
And take care, and we will see you all again next week.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and on wildeastfootball.net.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。